during the course of Friday. And maybe, again, a few spots of drizzle here and there, spots of rain towards the north coast as the breeze picks up. But it will be breezy in Scotland. Again, a lot of cloud here too. And in the north and west, some outbreaks of rain, some strengthening winds in northern Scotland, gales in the Northern Isles, possibly gusts of 70 miles an hour. And although those winds will ease down during the evening, the weekend will be breezy for all of us. Northwesterly wind, the good news with that is it will blow away all the fog and it will leave us with some sunshine, particularly across southern and eastern areas. And that's where we'll see the highest temperatures, possibly 20 Celsius in southeast England. How does that sound, Alan?
That'll do. That'll do. Thank you. Thank you very much, Darren. That's Darren Bett at the Weather Centre. Now on Radio 4, our Book of the Week, and Gideon Lewis Krauss comes to the end of the Temple Pilgrimage at T88. Parts of his body continue to play up, and it's certainly not hiking weather out there. But the chance to meet people on the road keeps him going in A Sense of Direction.
Today we'll see my first encounter with the sea, and I've very much been looking forward to it. On the Camino, the sea was so freighted, the big final thing to look forward to. But the sea here isn't a finale, it's a hem. It rains all day en route to the coast, and at first I tell myself to be glad it's not worse. It gets worse. The rain is coming down in cataracts. This continues for 8 hours until I reach Temple 23, Yakuoji, which looks like a delicate crimson and ekru balm, half sunk into the hillside, overlooking a beach where giant sea turtles come to lay their eggs. Now that I've seen the gray sweep of sea for the first time, I will never be far from it. The next morning, it's hailing, and I need to go to the hospital as I have an infected blister, so I decide I'll wait a day before I set out to walk the coast. As I'm sitting waiting for my antibiotics, I finish typing up my second dispatch. I write at length about how badly I wished a certain anonymous someone had been with me. Before sunrise, I hobble off once again. It's two long days with a seawall on my left, or rather a series of seawalls. Little anchorages of rusty bobbing boats are folded into the breaks between them. On my right are steep, craggy hills. I get a note from the woman in Shanghai. She's enraged by my half-occluded reference to her in the last dispatch. I've gone too far, she writes, and makes it clear I shouldn't write back. I feel rejected and exposed. All this vaunted solitude seems to have done is make other people seem unreal, bit players in my performance of self-discovery. Over the next few days, I sit down by the side of the road every 20 minutes and consider giving up. My brother Micah reminds me by email, every time you don't stop and come home, you're choosing to continue. I collapse into a day off in Kochi, and I visit the mall and buy some Nordic walking poles. Later, when people ask me what the big difference between the Camino and Shikoku was, I'll say that in Spain, it took me 22 days to buy them, but in Japan, it took me only 16. And that is proof enough that a person can change. I take a little open ferry across an inlet and stop at T33, long enough to buy fruit. Near T35, it begins to rain. I check into a business hotel, drop off my things, and head out towards the temple, which is another tag temple, one that requires you to retrace your steps. By the time I'm back outside, the streets are drying in radiant afternoon sunlight, and when I reach the top of the hill, I'm feeling downright charmed. The temple is in the Chinese style, with bright algae blooms of patina on the tin pagoda roof. In the free room for pilgrims, a white guy is hysterically waving from the window. You're Gideon, who did the Camino. I'm JR, I did the Camino too, 7 years ago, in February, when a lot of the albergues are closed. It's a strong opening, establishing his pilgrim credentials. He's in his late 40s and grew up in Boston. My mom and my sister both passed away in the last year. I'm so sorry, JR. I needed to do something to get through my grief, so I searched for a sacred walk. You want to walk together tomorrow? I take his Morton guide and mark my business hotel. Let's meet for rice balls there at 6:30. What's a rice ball? Oh man, you've really been missing out. We're setting a good pace. The next 20 kilometers follow a serpentine road along a high, rolling ridge of peninsula, and off to our right are glimpses of an emerald inlet, and to our left, and a few hundred meters below, sharp spines of jetty sheer and buckle into the silver sea, their steeps felted in dark cedar, unruly lime feathers of bamboo, and the occasional pink burst of new blossoming cherry. It's amazing how quickly, after a long spell of solitude, someone else can go from seeming like a cosmic blessing to being an enormous nuisance. With JR, it takes the hour we spend together, after a wonderful 35-kilometer day, wandering around Susaki City looking for a place to sleep. By the time I manage to find a ryokan that's okay with him, it's after 6, and I'm ready to crash standing up. In the morning, JR decides to take the train for about 15 kilometers. I'll leave some notes in the guest books, yeah, I say. Sure I will. So long, Gideon. The only thing more amazing than how quickly someone can drop from savior to nuisance is how quickly you can miss him. The next afternoon, the peninsula proper begins. The trail has laborious stretches in and out of ravines. Finally, around the last corner, there's T-38, a wealthy assembly of opulent pagodas staged coolly around a rippled pond and rock garden. I'm sitting on my pack outside the ryokan, and up strolls JR from the wrong direction. We set off for the onsen, where we sit in the hot pool on the balcony and look out over the darkening granite cliffs over an empty copper sea. Alone again, I've reached a path which follows a river upstream into the mountains toward T-44 and T-45, the farthest inland of all the temples. In the villages, they're doing some sort of spring burning. The sunny air is acrid. Blankets and futons wave from banisters. In the ryokan in the evening, there are two cute girls around my age sitting down to a large and complicated kaiseki meal. At breakfast, one of the girls comes over and bows, and I bow, and she bows again. I'm Yumi from Kobe. I'm Gideon from nowhere at the moment. She laughs. I would like to hear that story. The girls ask if I want to walk with them. I ask Yumi how her English got so good, and she says she lived in Nebraska for a year. I raise my eyebrows. Hey, you're the one who came to Japan and goes straight to Shikoku. But isn't all of Japan like this? Rusty tin shacks and tiny rice paddies and pastoral decline? She punches me on the arm, and her sedge hat falls down and covers her face. The sun disappears and it sleets, then hails for 7 or 8 minutes, and that makes it okay to duck under Yumi's hat. And then it's sunny again. T-45 is wedged into a cleft in a towering, pocked limestone cliff. Yumi invites me to come along with them while they pray. We light the candles and the incense and say the sutras together. For the first time in 26 days, I am sure I will be nostalgic for this moment later. There are little food stalls on the way down to the parking lot, and I buy the girls ginger candy as a setai. Gifts. Yumi and Nori are heading to a ryokan they've reserved another 6 kilometers toward T-46. But we've got 8 kilometers back toward T-44 first, which somehow, today, despite 11 hours of walking, I don't mind at all. Yumi turns to me. When you're finished, you will come to Osaka and we can all celebrate. I'd love that. The snow in the morning is a lovely break from the rain, and I leave at dawn. The path runs up over a high pass, then leaves the road and descends in switchbacks down a long ravine, with waterfalls and panoramic views of Matsuyama and the inland sea beyond. Back at the hostel, I write some emails and call my parents to tell them I'm missing them for the Passover Seder. My dad and Brett are drunk and pleased I've called. The longing I feel in the wake of Yumi and Nori's departure makes me feel sad to be by myself. I pace the hostel's common room for a while, finally sit back down at the computer. I write to the woman in Shanghai and say that she was entirely right to get so angry, and I am so sorry. Nori sends me an email from Osaka, inviting me to meet them on Friday. I study the Morton while I walk, figure out if I can make it in time. T-57, up a small hill. T-58, up a small mountain. So there are 25 kilometers remaining to T-60, which is at 700 meters. At the onsen, a little short of T-60, I remove my sock and a second toenail comes with it. But the prospect of the party has put me in a fine mood. In front of me stands T-66, Unpenji, which is so high it assumes a topographical map color I've not seen Morton use before. It's 7 hours uphill, and there's nothing but empty path and the sound of my own breathing. At the top, I sit on a little seasonal ski slope and eat my first Japanese ice cream. I can't help but feel the first stirrings of that light vertigo of conquest that suffused the final few days of the Camino. An hour past T-70, I reach back into my bag for the Morton and realize it's gone. I could probably make it on the signposts alone, but by now I've made all sorts of important, angry annotations in the book, and I'd like to hang on to it. I slog back an hour, find the book by the stamp office at T-70, and hate myself. That evening, the Ryokan has wireless. There's my first cautiously chatty email in a month from the girl in Shanghai. At T-87, there's a big map indicating the two routes to T-88, Ukabuji. At the divergence of the two paths, there's a pilgrim community center. A man rushes over, gives me tea, and asks me to spell my name. He instructs his secretary to fill out a certificate of completion. You take hard path over mountain to Ukabuji, not easy one on road, yes? Yeah, of course. I leave feeling tentative, but the route is so steep and I don't have the energy to think much. The final 100 meters is literally rock climbing, hand over hand over a series of limestone boulders and fragments. At the summit, I can see out under the gray storm clouds, far into the gray over Takamatsu. It feels perfectly appropriate somehow that there's no view but gray, like our climb over the Pyrenees. I have 1 kilometer left to go. When you arrive at T-88, over the superfluous mountain route, your anxious descent ends mid-temple. You just come round the last switchback and you're there, right in the thick of it. Nobody comes up and congratulates me or even seems to notice that I've just walked 1,200 kilometers. The single befitting monument is a little glass house packed with the walking sticks that pilgrims leave behind when they finish. In front of the stamp office, there's a bin where they collect them for this public interment. I drop the Nordic walking poles at a rakish angle and look back only once as I walk away.
Patrick Kennedy was reading from A Sense of Direction by Gideon Lewis Krauss. The producer was Duncan Minchell. And tomorrow there's an important reunion with his father at a festival in Ukraine. That's at the same time here on Radio 4. Thank you. This is BBC Radio 4. Now here's the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 00115 today, Friday the 14th of March. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Dogger, Fisher and German Bight, Rockall, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. High Irish Sea, 1031, expected 150 miles west of Seoul, 1034, by 1800 Friday. Developing low, moving northeast, expected Norwegian Basin, 983, by same time. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Utsira, South Utsira, Forties, Cromarty. Westerly or northwesterly, backing southerly for a time, 4 or 5, increasing 7 to severe gale 9, occasionally storm 10 later.